Welcome to All Villa, No Filler. Remember to subscribe to the podcast, follow us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. This is Rivalries, the show where we meet fans from rival clubs. Villa are due to play Tottenham Hotspur on Sunday in a battle for Champions League places. It's a hot and heavy game, isn't it? So to chat about that, I'm joined by Spurs season ticket holder Ollie Leach, my former radio co-host from the finest institution in the land, Sheffield University. Ollie, welcome back to All Villa, No Filler.
Hello, thank you for having me again. There's all our fans now trying to find those episodes back through the ages of Sheffield University radio station. Hi, Mum.
Yeah, our parents basically, and
exactly,
one or two nerdy housemates who were hung over at home.
A few people in the union going, who the hell are this lot?
Yeah. So, Spurs Villa, it's turned into a massive fixture, really. How are you feeling going into the game?
Yeah, nervous, actually. I was wondering about this earlier this week. I was thinking, if anyone had said to me 5 years ago, and I mean this as a compliment, not a back or sort of backhanded compliment, but it's a compliment of sorts to Villa. If anyone told me 5 years ago, I'd be nervous about a rivalry with Aston Villa for a Champions League playoff, I think they would have been mad. But Villa have done so well. They've made all the right decisions. They basically made all the decisions Man United have failed to take over the last however many years. Good ones. I'm a little bit nervous because you guys have, United's done his thing. But we'll not be too shabby this season. Our form's okay. So we'll see how it goes. But impossible to call this time around. Absolutely impossible.
You're right. I mean, Spurs have become had become a total bogey club for Aston Villa for over a decade, I think. And it did come to a point after about 8 years where I was sat there going, we last beat Spurs. We always lose to Spurs suddenly. So that record has sort of changed in the last year, finally, thank the gods, which is what Unai Emery's MO has been, that he's been ending curses for us, really. But before we go any further as well, I must mention for those who are watching on YouTube as well and those hearing on audio, Ollie is wearing an absolutely fine gilet. That is a great representation of a legend for the Spurs, sort of legend for Villa, maybe in a sort of ironic sense, in Tim Sherwood, tactics Tim. So I'm feeling the power of Sherwood emanating through you, Ollie.
There's certain mercurial talents in the dugout who stick with you, and Tim Sherwood was it.
Anytime he does anything, if I say anything good, you got to salute me. Like that time he saluted Adebayor.
Genuinely, I was just a bit cold, and I wanted a gilet. This was the cheaper one, actually. They had one in the store that was like 99 quid. And then I stumbled across, I think it's probably the bargain bucket.
Wow, 99 quid. No wonder revenues are so good at Tottenham Hotspur these days. But look, speaking of Spurs, you're fifth of the table. You had a great start to the season. Got a bit rocky. I think a few injuries probably impacted you there. But how are Spurs playing right now?
It's bitty. I mean, I was at the game on Saturday, and what you really sort of feel is Spurs haven't had momentum over the last month or so, and it's a combination of factors, but mostly just the fixture list. Like from February to March, there was a 2 week gap, and we've just had another 2 week gap. I don't really know why. I think it was Chelsea in the League Cup final, but it's disruptive, and obviously, as you say, we've had the injuries, they've been disruptive as well. Basically, everything was going swimmingly up until we played Chelsea, and I think in about October. And then, two players got sent off. Madders got an injury. And then while VAR was doing its thing, Mickey van der Ven got cold and then pulled his hamstring, and he was out for 3 months. The team is now gradually back. I think only Pedro Porro is a doubt. I haven't really seen where he's up to, but the team is now back, but you just don't get the sense watching them that they're really in a rhythm. Really good teams in the Premier League, particularly Villa at the moment, you get in a rhythm. You see, players are playing with through intuition. They're not really thinking so much. They're just doing, which is where Ange has always said he wants the team to be. He wants the team to be just working off intuition, playing like they're 10 years old again and just having fun almost, which sounds a little bit irresponsible, but apparently it's worked for him. But you know, and I never got the feeling on Saturday Spurs were really doing that. And what didn't help as well is that Palace kind of parked the bus a bit as well. And the combination of the two things, you know, a lack of rhythm and bus parking, it made it quite difficult. But the team is pretty much fully fit now. Sessegnon, I don't think, will, sadly, for the poor guy, play again this season, maybe not for the rest of the year. He just keeps pulling up lame. But yeah, we're sort of in a good place injuries-wise, suspensions-wise. Romero hasn't been booked since the turn of the year, which is
a miracle in itself, yeah.
Yeah, I expect it might change at the weekend. But the sort of stone-cold killer look he had in his eye when he was standing in his casual gear watching Matt Cash upend Rodrigo Bentancur in the first fixture, I think is probably playing through his mind on a day-to-day basis.
Well, we have to have Emi Martinez will get in his ear and sort him out, you know, fellow Argentinian. You know, is Richarlison, I did see recently that something might be up with Richarlison. Is he fit? Is he okay to go?
I don't know. I saw things on Twitter today saying he might be. But I hope he is, because unlike a lot of people, I actually think on his day he's a handful. Yeah. He's not, everyone's, you know, the problem Spurs fans have is we have, and there's going to be you probably hear the eyes rolling when I say this, but we handled the best striker in the world for 10 years. Yeah. And so, you know, the market which you compare is always going to be really high. I mean, you guys will do it with, you know, who came in for Jack Grealish. You guys seem to have found perfectly good solution to that. But do you know what I mean? It's like when you set the bar that high with your forward, you're always going to compare him to that. The only person you can really come close is Son, because he's so lethal in the box. Yeah. Richarlison, you know, he didn't click with Conte. There's some fascinating quotes out today about him basically misunderstanding a question Conte gave him in like a team briefing. He like asked him, why are you so late? And I think Richarlison sort of asked him, thought he was asking him, what do you think of my tactics? And he basically said, your tactics are rubbish, the formation is rubbish, but in slightly more Anglo-Saxon English. So, yeah, he didn't play for him again, I don't think.
Right, well, you know, I look at Spurs and the player, I mean, obviously Son is absolutely one of the greatest players ever in the Premier League, but the player that does seem always cause me problems whenever I see him play against Aston Villa, and that was previously for Leicester, and now for Spurs, is James Maddison. You know, he has been injured a bit now this season. You know, he got a brilliant assist the other day against Palace, but how is he coming back into form? Is he still finding his way a bit?
I think it goes back to what I was saying. I think the team is still finding its way. You can still see he's got it. But it was interesting. Like at the start of the season, I don't know how it happened so quickly, but the team was really sort of clicking and really going for it from the first game of the season. We were all sitting there going, okay, this is not the team we saw last season. And I sort of, you know, on Saturday against Palace, you know, he got a great assist, a lovely little dink over to Romero for the header. It was lovely. But you can kind of see the team, you know, Bentancur's not really played with in March. It was Bentancur, Bissouma and Madders in midfield, and you could kind of tell that those three hadn't really played together much.
Right.
When he gets the ball, you can tell he's on it. And it's a weird thing because, you know, sometimes midfielders have to pass backwards, and he did it like twice, and we were going, oh, Madders, what's going on? But you just kind of know what you think. But I could see him getting a little bit frustrated because he was picking up decent spots and he wasn't always getting found where he might have got found earlier in the season. But, you know, he's a class operator, so he'll always turn up.
Yeah, I think he's the perfect player to have against a high line as well, because he likes to come deep and he's very, very good at picking out passes from deep that break lines. I think Maddison is a really, really brilliant football player. You know, with Spurs as well, you know, where would you say you're at your strongest? Where's the strongest part of your team, would you say?
I mean, I genuinely believe Mickey van der Ven will end up being one of the all-time great Dutch centre-backs.
I thought he was brilliant at the start of the season. His speed.
Yeah. Even Romero, we've conceded goals. So I'm not going to sit here and say they're the best partnership in the league yet, but I think they, with time, they will be. That's been disrupted, as discussed, through suspensions and injuries and what have you. And they've just started. I feel a bit bad for Dragusin, who we signed from Genoa over January transfer window, because apparently he's amazing, but we just haven't seen him because the two guys who he's brought into cover for the first time in the season have been available all the time. But those two are beasts, and they're athletic, they're brilliant on the ball. I genuinely wouldn't have another centre back pairing in the team, but they're also our weakness because, you know, with you, same with you guys, we play the high line. It is open to, you know, being broken, but we also have Mickey van der Ven is the fastest player in the history of the Premier League officially. So we have that get out of jail the same way Kyle Walker does it for Man City. So I mean, look, it's a bit of a weird thing to say what's the strongest thing in the defence, but, you know, with Porro and Udogie, I think they're just fantastic. I mean, Porro's been amazing all season.
Yeah, he has.
So reliable. His work ethic is just extraordinary. His right foot's fantastic. And yeah, all these sort of Argentine, Spanish players, they all sort of go nuts every time we tackle, we'll do all this stuff. Yeah, pumps the crowd up. We love it. But, you know, can't answer your question, can't look further than Song.
Yeah.
He's human Song. He's the guy's brilliant and just finishes everything. So, yeah. Superb player.
But it's, I mean, your fullbacks, I mean, Udogie as well has been, you know, a great signing. But it's going to be a fascinating game. I mean, the High Line derby, I call it, you know, the two teams basically so close together. And I feel like this game could easily end up like 5-4, 4-4, something like that.
Good game.
You know, with Spurs' away form, though, you know, from what I've read, it hasn't been as impressive. Does that give you any cause for concern?
Not really. I don't think there's a thing. You know what I mean? When someone's like, oh, they're rubbish away from home. I don't think there's really that thing. I think they go into every game sort of up for it. But, you know, it's an away game, so you've got to add that element of doubt. But it doesn't necessarily worry me that there's like a sort of away hoodoo. It's more what the opposition team are like at home. And, you know, you guys are good at home. So that's what's going to make it, I think, quite a engaging, exciting encounter. I think it's going to be one of those ones that gets decided in the 97th minute. I imagine VAR will probably find some way to wind up someone.
There's going to be a few offsides in this game.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think a lot of time is going to be wasted drawing those stupid lines. It's just extraordinary how that's killing my will to live.
Yeah, it's incredibly annoying. Yeah, and it happens a lot, particularly with two teams that play high lines. Those lines come into the game quite often.
I made a suggestion not too long ago to a producer at Radio 5 Live, and I was going to do the phoning because I was getting wound up about this, about the offside rule. And I was suggesting that, a bit like in cricket where you have umpires call, you need to have an element of kind of doubt, you know? And with football, that exists more than cricket, because cricket's quite sort of, you know, lines draw straight, you know. And I was saying that I'd actually like to see the lines be a bit thicker, and if they overlap, it's onside or offside, depending on which way the decision went. Because the problem that not many people realise about the offside is that, you know, if you worked in telly, you know that pictures are made up of 24 frames a second. So that gives 1/24th of a second that a player can be running one way and another player can be running the other way. And they're scrolling through these 24 frames trying to work out if they're offside or not. But given how fast Premier League players actually move, you're talking about a good like half a metre distance that can be the difference between one frame to the next.
Yeah,
it's just not fit for purpose. You know, you need to introduce that element of doubt. And then that way you put the onus back on the lino, because it's his decision. And if he's just about right, then he goes with the lino.
There are occasions I look at it and think like it's just so close that I'm not really sure what they're calling, you know, just but then again, I think if they went to the daylight rule, it would end up being that teams would then become more defensive and the game would become more defensive because people would be able to risk playing those high lines, because it would just come
someone have a good idea of doing it by their feet, where the feet on the pitch, and then everything else is, because, you know, players lean depending on which way they're going.
Yeah, I think that's a decent suggestion. I think, yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
It's hideously over-engineered.
Semi-automated might be able to quicken it up. I feel like at the World Cup it wasn't as much of an issue. I don't feel like I noticed it as much as the World Cup when they had semi-automated.
They had that automated issue. They have that automated system, which they use in the Champions League now. I saw Kylian Mbappe's shoulder offside last night. This morning I was on the tube watching it.
And they just do it quickly, whereas these lines in the Premier League are just killing, you know, when you're in the stadium and they're taking forever about it, it's a real drawback. But get ready to see some of that on Sunday. with Aston Villa, obviously, you know, we're having one of the best seasons I've ever seen. We're currently fourth in the table, competing for the Champions League with you. Man United just looming in the background like that bloody Jaws the Shark.
They're
rubbish, but hopefully they don't catch up with either of us. I don't know how much you've seen of Villa really this season. What gives you any cause of concern coming to play against us?
Yeah, I mean, your forwards are totally on it at the moment. I vaguely remember the last time I did this podcast with you, you asked me the similar question, who worries you? And I think I said Zaniolo and Leon Bailey. And tell me if I'm misreading this, because I sensed when I said Leon Bailey, you were like, yeah, because I don't think he quite hit his stride yet. Yeah. And I think, am I right in thinking his early sort of Villa career was a bit kind of, yeah, he's sort of good, but is he great? Is he there? And now,
yeah,
he's pretty decent, isn't he, to be fair?
Yeah. He's entered the Grealish zone, I call it, in the sense that when Grealish used to get the ball, you expected magic.
Yeah.
Bailey's hit that point now where I call him an electric player. He's absolutely electrifying. Like, he'll just beat a man. His speed of touch, his movement, his creativity. It's absolutely extraordinary to see the level he's hit. In the sense that he looks like a player who could play for anybody, like a Barcelona, is that sort of a player. And I could not have expected him to reach this level. I don't think any Villa fan expected him to reach this level, given how his first two seasons went.
I remember, like, he was the guy I used to sign from Bayer Leverkusen on Football Manager, just because he, you know, put him on the right wing and turned him to sprint. You know, it's fantastic. But him and Watkins, I think, you know, Watkins has really turned into a properly good Premier League forward. I think he's a handful for anyone. He finishes everything. Though I think he missed one at the weekend v Luton. But no, he causes problems last time. I expect he'll cause us problems again. Just two very, very good forwards. What's the deal with Zaniolo though? Because he was sort of Italian.
I think the theory I've got with Zaniolo is that I think we've tried to play him centrally because he sort of was supposed to be a Buendia replacement because Buendia got the ACL injury at the start of the season. So brought him in on loan for a year. But centrally, it just feels like in the Premier League, he holds onto the ball a bit too long to make it work because players are just immediately on him. Whereas when he plays out on the right, which has been very rare at Villa because we're so stacked out right with Diaby and Bailey, but there's been a couple of occasions he's played out right and he's actually looked pretty good. Like, he had Chilwell on toast, for instance, Stamford Bridge in the FA Cup. And one or two occasions, I think against Brentford away, went out right and he did well there. So he's, I just think he's a right winger. And I just think, unfortunately for him, it's actually a position where we just don't really need anyone else at the moment.
You've got like two world classes out over there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Luis has had a cracking season, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's a proper, you know, I think he should be starting for Brazil. That's the level he is now.
Interesting. Like, we were linked with him over the summer, I would say. And I was a bit like, now I'm not here again. But it's who you replace, because our midfield is pretty stacked as well.
You've got a very strong midfield.
Yeah, I mean, we're very lucky in that we can say to someone like Pap Sarr and Gio Lo Celso, like, you can sit this one out.
Yeah.
Because we've got Bentancur, Bissouma and Maddison. Individually, as I'm saying, three brilliant players, but have they yet gelled? I don't know. I'd be amazed if Pap Sarr doesn't start against you guys on Sunday, just because he played 20 minutes at the last weekend, but he just runs. Just runs and runs and runs. He just grinds down his opposite man.
Yeah, it's also worth mentioning, we're recording this on Wednesday, so it's just before the Ajax game. So Villa are playing away in Ajax on Thursday evening.
We've got a bit of history in Amsterdam.
Don't know you if do.
You heard.
I do remember a a certain third goal went in from someone called Lucas Moura, and the camera had like the worst editing of all time for the most dramatic goal ever, didn't it? It was like,
oh, it was, but it cut away to what's his name, the referee thing, didn't he? The vision mixer accidentally cut away to the guy BT Sport got in to sort of say, yeah, that's the right decision, because those guys are useless because they just sit there and agree with everything the referee did, explain why they were right even when they're wrong. You just picture him going.
The reason I mention it is we don't know the impact, you know, the Thursday to Sunday thing will have on Villa, that, you know, Tottenham do get an extra week, though maybe Villa will find even more rhythm by having more games. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, Tottenham have, I think you're right, I think that having those gaps, it's not helping, particularly with players who are coming back from injury. The more games are better in some occasions. But also, you know, we don't know, will Villa pick up an injury? Please God, touch wood, we don't, because we've just had a really horrible time of it with injuries recently. Ramsey just picked up one last week.
Jordan Henderson could clap to one of you guys.
That's it. You know, I saw the Ajax video of him chasing down a player. Something very impressive to look at. So, you know, obviously this is all caveated with, you know, when this goes out, there might be another injury for Villa. And hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully we have our key players, particularly, you know, Pau Torres, has been injured pretty much for 2 months now. Ollie Watkins, McGinn, Luiz, Emi Martinez, Konsa. Those players are so key for us at the moment. So
as long as Matt Cash doesn't get injured.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to start. I actually think he's going to start on the bench. What's going to happen is Romero's going to get sent off, and it's going to show Matty Cash in his casual clothes just looking on at him, getting bouncing off. I think if I was to guess, I think it would be if Carlos is fit, well, maybe they'll put Longley in. So Longley, Pau Torres and Konsa on the right back. That's what I think they'll go with.
Longley's been all right for you guys, hasn't he?
I like him. I think he's all right. I think he's a good player.
I dislike him. Spurs fans have this slight habit of just turning on someone after, like, you know, one missed pass. I like him. I always liked him. I thought he was quite tidy. He's not the quickest, but he's tidy on the ball. He's not the biggest, so he's not going to clatter someone to get the ball like Romero or something. Romero's not the biggest. I think he's a solid get.
Yeah, I agree. I think we mentioned it last time, perhaps, or we did speak about it before, where it felt like Longley was just a bit of a victim of circumstance last season. You know, with Spurs.
No one did well in that team.
Yeah.
No one did well in that team. It was just a dog's dinner the entire thing.
Whereas I think, you know, I think if he was there this season, it'd probably be a different story. I think with Villa, when he's been given his chance, he's actually been doing pretty well. He's just not as good on the ball as Pau Torres, which is hard to be when I think Pau Torres might be one of the world's best ball-playing defenders. You know, prediction-wise, you know, it's always a bit of a hairy task, isn't it, going predictions? And I feel like this could be a proper basketball game, but... what are you predicting for this?
But I can see there being like a 97th minute win.
Like there was a few years ago, and Son scored to make it 3-2.
Well, I always think back to the game on our 125th year on White Hart Lane, when we had a special stupid blue and white kit, and I think Yunus Kabul scored the winner in the last dying minutes. It was 4-3. And you guys have been like 3-1 up. My memory for such weird things.
That was a 4-4 game, 2000.
Was it 4-4? It was 4-4. Yeah.
We were 4-1 up.
And that was
I watched that in a pub in Sheffield, which I think was called the York. The York pub in Bruno. The York.
Screen bar.
Yeah.
Do you remember screen bars? Good Lord. I was in a pub in Cardiff.
Right.
I think it's going to be 4-3 Spurs.
4-3 Spurs.
And Matt Cash will survive the day. But many of our players won't, because he'll have wrapped his studs around their knees.
Well, I'm going to
Weird Al. That's got so heated, that. I mean, he's really a persona non grata at Tottenham Hotspur Football Club.
Yes,
the context is, like, I don't know if it's sort of widely known, but when Bentancur got injured last season, it completely derailed Spurs' season, which was already fairly derailed. But we basically were hopeless after he left, and he was out for 8 months. Came back, first game back, 20 minutes in. I think all people can agree a fairly shoddy challenge. Sent you a lot of texts. I've calmed down since, but I don't really want anyone to get injured. But I don't think I'm going to mind if he gets a few rough. But he's quite a solid bloke, so he'll probably kind of enjoy it. But if he gets a few rough encounters with a bit of Argentine muscle in the Spurs team, I won't exactly be sad, put it that way.
Well, it could turn into a hairy old boxing match then this weekend, you know, knowing some of the fiery characters on both sides. But I'm going to say, I think this will go a million different ways, this game. Two really, really exciting teams. I think neutrals are going to love this game. I think the last time we played each other was a fantastic game. What I did notice in that game was that Tottenham should have had three goals in the first half. Didn't take enough of your chances.
No.
Caught offside too often. And then second half, you lost. It felt like you just couldn't. It's like your energy levels just dropped.
Vincent Kirby been pulling the strings. I know it sounds kind of weak, but he'd been pulling the strings. He'd come back. He looked great. He looked like he hadn't been out. And then he got clattered. And then, you know, it was a good, you know, it's that, you know, he got clattered. He tried to play on. That takes the energy out of the game. And then, you know, the heads drop a bit. You can kind of see it happening really in real time. And then you guys sort of, Bosh, let's have it. So,
I think we just took, I think if Spurs, because I don't know, if you've got a bit of a thing in second halves, I think you had a similar thing against West Ham as well when you lost at home against them, where second half the momentum seems to dip. And if that's still an issue, I think Villa.
I don't know, because we've won quite a few games in the last dying embers of the game.
Yeah.
Like, Brighton in the 95th, we beat Palace.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, Palace was 71st, we equalised. But, and you know, we always. There's been a few last minute snatch and grabs. I think Man City, we got a last minute equaliser. But there's always lulls in the game, but and James, because he's all about, you know, you hear him say, you know, you never turn off, you're always involved. The team, you know, can work us out.
It's such a tough one, and it's a massive game. Depends on if we just, please God, don't get an injury against Ajax, but I'm going to say Villa 3. Tottenham 2. That's where I'm going to go with.
So I We're both very diplomatic, three. Aren't we?
Yeah, I know. It's like neither one of us really want to just go for
I think it could be one of those games where actually one team has just got it.
Yeah.
And the other team doesn't quite know how to deal with it. And it could be like a 4-1.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
You're right. There's no way of predicting it.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, you know, the high line's one thing, but both teams have got absolute gas up front. You know, Timo Werner, although he couldn't finish his own dinner, he's rapid. He's absolutely rapid. Sonny's rapid. Cooley's not rapid, but he's technically brilliant. But then Brennan Johnson can come on in the 80th minute. He's rapid.
Yeah.
So, you know, against Dina, for example, you know, he's getting on a bit. I fancy his chances to beat him in a sprint.
Yeah.
And I'm probably being a bit harsh on Timo Werner because he did score on Saturday. But
maybe that's the catalyst for him to kick on. You know, you never know. I think one thing, like, you know, everyone can agree on is that, you know, for a very, very long time, it's felt like, you know, Spurs obviously made the breakthrough to the Champions League. You've been to a Champions League final recently, but you know that last 10 years has been very, you know, successful. I'd say, you know, particularly league wise. Maybe underachieved in the sense that there's maybe one or two things you could have won that, you know, you came very close to doing. But I think, you know, with Villa and Spurs, I think historically for a long time have been seen as these teams that, you know, don't always get mentioned in the same breath as United and Liverpool and Arsenal and whoever else. Whereas actually to see both teams playing such brilliant, brilliant football, expansive football, to see United just stinking up the joint, which is why I'm like, I just don't want United to catch either side. You know, to see, you know, both sides competing for the Champions League, it's refreshing and it's different. And, you know,
the two, you know, for me, the sort of Villa's time in the Championship was just kind of a bit, I mean, I wasn't sort of losing sleep over it because that would be a weird thing to do for an opposition fan. But it was a bit weird because Villa's a Premier League team, you know, Villa's a team that should be giving, for me, they're always a team that's going to give you a hard time. Like growing up, Spurs always went to Villa and I always thought, oh, we're going to beat them. And then it was never easy.
No.
It was never easy.
We had a good record against Spurs until about 2008. It was about as soon as you started buying good players, Modric and Bale, we just kept losing.
Yeah. Modric was, for me, I'm trying to think. I mean, there was the Martin Jol era. Martin Jol, for me, it was like, I always think, you know, Spurs, with managers, they're sort of going for evolutions. And like Martin Jol, for me, was the first time the team was one that I actually was really excited to watch. It used to be that I was excited by individuals like Teddy Sheringham, Jurgen Klinsmann. Ginola just made the 90s worthwhile, frankly, as a Spurs fan. But then Martin Jol's team, while the players weren't as good as they are now, you still wanted to watch the team. You know, you still have people like Steve Malbronk, who was like a hard worker, but he's not exactly the most amazing player in the world. But then Berbatov came along and you just kind of thought, well, and then Modric and
Robbie Keane in there, Defoe.
Robbie Keane, oh my word. Michael Carrick's two seasons at Spurs were just, he was amazing. The biggest tragedy in football, this is completely off the beaten track and totally irrelevant to your podcast, but I'm going to say it. For me, the biggest injustice in football is Michael Carrick has like 34 England caps.
Yeah.
How is that possible that a guy who was the bedrock of, who basically replaced Roy Keane in Fergie's side, I think he's got something like 500 Man United appearances in all competitions. And for some reason, we spent a decade trying to get Gerrard and Lampard to play together instead of Michael Carrick. Just an absolute gift for either one of those midfielders. For me, it was never a question about can we get those two to play together. It was how can we make one of them work
with Carrick. That was always the answer.
Carrick. It was extraordinary mismanagement of the England team. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like saying now, well, I like Maddison and I like Bellingham, although Madders. It's Bellingham, really, isn't it? You know, I like Madison, I like Bellis. Let's try and make them work together. It's like, well, no, just sticking Declan Rice, you know.
You're exactly right. I always thought that with Carrick. I always thought he was you know, if Alex Ferguson makes you the linchpin of your midfield, well, who better to, he's basically telling you that's what to do, isn't it?
The most extraordinary thing is he's never complained about it. If I was him, I'd be livid. It's like Ian Wright as well. How few England caps did that guy get? And he just banged them in, week out. It's nuts.
Yeah. Well, Ollie, you know, I think it's going to be a very exciting game this weekend. It's a big, big day. And I think the Villa Park crowd will be really up for it. And the away support will be very, very loud as well. So I'm excited to see it. A bit nervous. Can't deny that. But
it's a real game of consequence. You know, it's
feels like it, doesn't it?
It is, yeah. I think we'll both be annoyed with the draw because it's almost like we want an answer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's still a lot of football to be played this season, but it feels like whoever wins this is going to get that full spot. But someone, I haven't quite worked out the maths, but apparently there's a chance that fifth could get Champions League as well. I assume your Liverpool win the trophy.
And we definitely want German teams to go out of the Champions League right now because I think Germany and I think Italy are going to get it most likely. Mm. It's between Germany and England then. So we kind of need German clubs not to do well in Europe and English teams to do well. So
I'll always be a Harry Kane fan. The guy's just extraordinary.
Yeah. You never know if Spurs finish fifth and Bayern Munich are there in the final. Kane scores a winner in the 90th minute, denies England the Champions League fifth place. Can you imagine? Oh, it'd be painful. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Can you imagine?
Anyway, Ollie, thanks massively for coming on. And good luck to Spurs. Not too much luck, but good luck to you for the rest of the season.
Yes, the same, but not on Sunday.